Hey y'all, I'm Tanya. I'm an addict. I'm really glad to be here. It was so cute. The other night I told my story and then they were like, we forgot to record. So here I am. Two times the charm. So what I've been told about telling my story is we talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I like to give some background information on like where I am in the world. Life experience, like blah blah blah. I was born in 1977. I live in the US. I was born in Anchorage, Alaska, but my family is from Asheville, North Carolina. My dad was in the military. We traveled around for a little bit and then we went back to Asheville, North Carolina. I grew up there. It's a pretty like liberal hippie mountain town, so it's kind of fun. When I was growing up, it wasn't that fun. Because it was just like boring, right? Like anywhere we're from is boring, when we're kids. I started using when I was about 13 years old. There were the outer line, there's like the super popular people, then semi-popular and all that. And I was like way off screen over there. I am neurospicy, so that could have been part of it. I came from a family of mental illness and abuse and neglect, so that could have been part of it too. I was invited to the most popular girl's house, and that's when I was introduced to a liquid drug. And I also have an eating disorder, so I don't really like know how to untangle those two. So I just put my eating disorder under the umbrella of addiction. It just makes it easier for me. So I was taught how to be anorexic and bulimic that night, and to drink liquid drugs. So, the next time at school, I was the most popular girl because I did more than anybody else. I had positive reinforcement for negative behavior. I went pretty hard and heavy because, being a latchkey kid, which is a word, which is a term to talk about like abandoned children and like neglected children. My parents didn't really pay attention to me so I could drink and use drugs and, do all kinds of things and they wouldn't even notice. My dad had PTSD from Vietnam and my mother had severe like anxiety and depression and suicidal tendencies. So, growing up in that house, it was really scary because I didn't know when my dad was going to pop off. I didn't know like if my mom was going to kill herself. So, like, drugs were like a solace. And when I first started using drugs, I was like, oh my God, like I found God. And being from the South, I grew up in a Southern Baptist home. And I just remember having a lot of questions. And I didn't know until I was late older that like how I process information is I ask questions for clarification. And they don't like that. They don't like you to ask questions. They want you to be like, just believe, just have faith. And I'm like, but I want some ideas. So, geographical cure, when I was like 19 years old, moved to Kansas City, Missouri, Kansas City, Kansas, all in the Midwest, St. Louis, all of that. And just found out really quickly that I could use as much as I wanted. And like I didn't have to map, it didn't have to matter, but I also learned really quickly that if I got stopped by the police, they wouldn't be like, oh, we'll just send you home and call your dad. Like it was a little like double-edged sword, but found heavier, quote unquote, heavier drugs there, used pretty hard stuff. And I knew something was wrong when so I don't have suicidal tendencies. And the only time I did was when I wanted to get, when I wanted it, the drugs to stop, when I wanted to get clean, I guess. I didn't know what that was at that time. I just knew that in 1998, they had this like Charter commercial that was like, if you don't get help at Charter, get help somewhere. And, I called and they were like, how old are you? And I was like, well, I'm 21 years old. And they're like, you sound like a 50-year-old woman because of the drugs I was using, the smoking and everything like that. And so I called my parents to come get me and they drove their pickup truck from Asheville, North Carolina to Kansas City, which is about an 18-hour drive. And during that time, I talked to my brother to, just kind of like help with the psychosis. I had really bad psychosis at the end, and I would yell at traffic. Like, I was that person. And anytime I see somebody doing that, I'm like, yeah, that sucks. So I went to an outpatient detox or outpatient treatment center. I didn't know anything about recovery. All I knew was like AA and was like these old white men, like in trench coats. Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I was a rave kid and had like different color hair. And anyway, so they told me if I went to this meeting at 12:30, then I didn't have to come back to the meeting that day. And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. And it was a Silver Door, which is still in operation today. And I don't know, like, my detoxes felt pretty bad to me. Like, I couldn't keep food down. I would shake all the time and have nightmares. Like, I just had pretty bad DTs. But when I went to that meeting, or when I was around people in recovery, those symptoms didn't happen. And I was like, the hell? And people were also talking about things that I felt my whole life without me telling them anything. So I was hooked immediately. I wanted to go to a meeting every single time I could. And at that time, we only had a 12:30 and then a night meeting. And so in between those two, I would hang out with people, get coffee, do whatever. Pretty quickly got involved in, like, it was PI at that time. Oh, my clean date is 11/29/98. And so I was 21 years old, and I got involved in PI, H&I activities, like anything I could, because I was unemployable. And I'm so grateful for my first sponsor. I remember going through the steps the first time, and I remember coming up on the second step and, like thinking it had to do with God. And she was like, we'll just, let's just, it doesn't say God in that step. So let's put that on the back burner. So I worked all 12 steps in my first year, not because I'm like some guru or some whatever. I was unemployable. Like, I didn't have anything else to do. And so I was on fire. And every time I did a step, I felt relief. When I had 16 months clean, my brother was diagnosed with a very rare disease called CREST. It's an acronym for five different diseases that happens to the firstborn child after someone who's been exposed to Agent Orange. And my dad was in Vietnam. And 2 weeks later, my brother passed away. So I had 16 months clean, and my brother died. And being in the South, people have lots of dumb ideas about that. And they would say things like, well, God needed another angel. And like, I personally think he was sick and his body gave out. Like, it just couldn't take the pain anymore. And that's when I fired God. I didn't really believe in God before that because, or I didn't want to because it didn't seem very nice. Like when I was growing up and I would say my little prayers and my mother would be like, don't pray for that. God's really busy. And I'd be like, well, how busy? Like, okay. And I do think there's some narcissism around, like, I'm blessed and God answered my prayers. Like, why yours? So anyway, fired God. And I actually talked to my brother for the longest time. I used to pray to my brother or whatever. I would talk to him, his energy, whatever. And I always say I am a agnostic with atheist tendencies. So went through the next few years of my recovery, not really dealing with the fact that my brother had passed away. And what happened with that is I worked a lot, did a lot of recovery, volunteer work. I got married, and I don't have my little queer banner up here today, but I got married to a man, so that didn't work out. But I didn't know that at the time. I just wanted love. And that's the thing that I really realized over this past like 15 years of my recovery. Like, this whole idea of you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. And the thing was, is I was showing you what I thought you wanted to see. And then I was being something else. So of course you weren't going to like me because I'm showing you somebody who's a complete fraud of who I am. But when I start showing up authentically, then it really is that people like me. And so it's kind of fun and a little off-putting because I'm like, wow, oh, they like me. Oh. So anyway, coming from a home of neglect and abuse, my nervous system is attracted to that behavior. I'm attracted to people who don't pay attention to me. I'm attracted. And so I had to do a lot of work to get out of that, but I didn't know that marrying this person. And it was pretty painful. And my part in it is that I am grateful that I went to therapy after I wish, it could have been better if I went before. But anyway, so I left my ex-husband. I was a real estate paralegal for 11 and a half years, and I went back to school in recovery. And it was really cool because I had all this turmoil going on. And then I went to this class one day, and this woman said, "I don't know what's going on with you outside of class, but you need to either be where that is or be here, but you need to pick one. And I hope you pick yourself." And I was like, whoa. So I picked myself. For the first time, like I always wanted someone else to pick me, but I picked myself. And so the past few years have been about like, this is what I like. And one of the problems I've always had with Narcotics Anonymous is what I call the company religion. Like, if you don't fit in this little box, you're not going to stay clean without a higher power, you know? And that was, I would just be like, well, maybe they won't know. Like, maybe I'm masked my whole life. Maybe they won't know. And I would think they would say things, and I'd be like, oh, okay, cool. Good luck with that. But it was so funny because I would have these sponsees come to me and be like, I don't believe in God. And I'll be like, me either. And so it was really fun. And I'm grateful that I know enough about the traditions and the concepts and steps. To be when people would say that, I'd say, is that my 5 minute? Okay, thank you. I'm gonna change real quick. I knew enough about the traditions to say, like, hey, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. So not it's not even that we are clean. Like, it's not even that we want to come to meetings for the rest of our lives or we want to work the steps. No, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using it. And we are the only ones who get to say what that looks like. And when 2020 hit, obviously it was just crazy like everybody else. And I knew like intellectually, because I'd been out in my area and I'd seen other meetings and, I knew intellectually that we had a worldwide fellowship, but having this bigger worldwide fellowship was like, whoa. And just not being I don't want to say this word, but being subjected to the same things in my area over and over and over again with the same people saying the same things about God and this and that, it really like broadened the base. And I was able to think differently about recovery and be like, well, that might work for you, but that doesn't work for me. And so it gave me a lot more creative freedom within my own recovery. And let's see, I had 21 years clean. Yeah, because I have 26 now when the pandemic hit. Anyway, math is hard. I just make pretty things. But anyway, when the pandemic hit, that happened. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. I got very involved with all the online meetings and love to just bounce around and do that. And being an artist, I work on the weekends. And so it was very hard. And I work around thousands and thousands of people. I mean, it is overwhelming at times. The last thing I want to do is go to a meeting and smell like five people's cologne when I leave. It's like, and then being able to sit in my own home, chill out, listen to, not share, maybe share, not, it doesn't matter. Like, just be here and get recovery was really fun. And so before the meeting, we were talking about Asheville, North Carolina. So that's where I live. We were affected by that crazy ass hurricane. And, I was thinking about this the other day because what I'm experiencing. So that was one of the scariest parts of my life I've ever been through. That was the scariest thing I've ever experienced. Like, a natural disaster is just terrifying. And I mean, like, duh, but it is so terrifying to be in it, not watch it on TV. Even watching it on TV is traumatic. And so, I helped my community, like everyone, but I had to work. And so I would drive hours away from my home in these pretty destroyed places and see that a lot of people had it worse than I did. So I've been dealing with imposter syndrome recently because I've got a bunch of grants and a loan and, like been on the news and shit. And that's really wonderful. But, trauma is not a competition. And just being able to be like, yeah, it's not a competition, Tanya. And then the other thing is I've been having some survivor's guilt like recently. And that's the only other time I've had that was when my brother passed away. And so, this idea of like, can I be joyful? Can I have good things happening? And of course I can, but it's like moving through from intellectual to like being able to feel that. So that's what I've been dealing with in the past. I can't believe it's only been 5 months. Like our whole world changed here and people are gone. Whole parts of our city are still fucking gone. And it's terrifying and sad. And then, like, all the crap that's happening in the world right now. This is my minute. Okay, 1 minute. Great. And it's just like, okay, where do I find the joy? Where do I put my energy? Like, do I put it into the negativity? No, hell no. I put it into like helping other people and my program and my sponsees and my own work. And in all of that, I did not think about using drugs. I did think about how fucked up it would be if somebody was using in the flood. That would be horrible. Like, God, that'd just be terrible. I'm really grateful to be clean. I'm grateful that I don't have to mask. I can be who I am. Like, I can tell silly jokes about Jesus, and nobody's gonna kick me out. So thank you so much for letting me share.